This is Common Ground, a program on world affairs and the people who shape events. This week we look at the future of the Group of 77, that block of nations from the developing world, which is also known as the Global South.
The G77, which also used to be called the Non-Aligned Group of Nations, has always sought to consolidate its technical and legal independence, and on core issues it has sought to maintain during the 50s and 60s and 70s what is called the non-aligned policy, which was to distance themselves from the two formulas of capitalism and communism and try to develop their own sense of direction.
Common Ground is produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Mary Gray Davidson. It was some 30 years ago that a group of developing nations decided to band together to offset the power of the richer countries of the North. The original Group of 77 has grown since then, and its membership overlaps with what's known as the Non-Aligned Movement, which was an effort to remain free from the political influence of either the United States or the Soviet Union during the Cold War. My guests today represent countries deeply involved in both the G77 and the Non-Aligned Movement. Razali Ismail is Malaysia's ambassador to the United Nations and was chair of the G77. He says the group is basically trying to make up for lost time.
The Group of 77 sprang out of a need from developing countries towards making their case heard. Basically, it's trying to get the playing field more level. You have to take into account that we are not starting all at the same time from zero. I mean, there are the industrialized countries that have already advanced ahead, and there are countries from the developing world which have not had a chance to advance as well and as fast as the industrialized countries. So we had, in fact, a program called the Caracas Program of Action and other programs like that. But we realize now that it's rhetorical demands or even question of making up for the grievances of the past that have been inflicted on us really will not help, because the West have political amnesia very conveniently. They forget very easily these things of the past. They want to start straight from where it is now. So the position of disadvantage continues to be perpetuated. This is where we are now. Even in the context of rethinking and many swirling changes around us, the group of 77 countries still have not been able to get the proper response from the industrialized countries.
And you're referring to some of the grievances of the past, things such as colonialism.
Colonialism, exploitation of natural resources from those areas, a system of economic control that was bad for us, that didn't allow for development. In fact, you have to talk about a lot of dominance. I don't want to exaggerate this, but you are talking about Western dominance of not just the economic levers, but also intellectual dominance. Intellectual thinking of the South was not given its due weight. If you think in terms of the civilization of Egypt, civilization of India, the fact now that it is only the intellectual position of the Western thoughts that are being dominating thinking, I think it's almost like a mental colonialism.
Next, we hear from Prakash Shah, India's ambassador to the United Nations. India was one of the founding countries of the G77.
The G77 or the developing countries really are made up of a very large number of small countries which have internationally a very weak position in any negotiations. And the whole objective of G77 is to band together the group of small countries, the very large group of small countries, whose interests coincide with each other. Interests which Ambassador Razali has already pointed out, you know, to undo the effects of colonialism, to be able to dominate their own economies, to get a just and fair treatment by the industrialist countries, whether in the trade field, in the investment field, in the field of development assistance. So it's the one basic reason for the G77 was that if you band together and if you have common interests, then it is better to put forward your case both in terms of public opinion and in terms of negotiations with the industrialized countries as a group. And that strengthens your position, and that is a way in which you could get more out of the negotiations than you would if you were individually fragmented in terms of your negotiations. As he said, perhaps because of this grouping and because of the strength of the grouping, the G77 sometimes got carried away in demanding everything under the earth and may have in some ways, this may have in some ways affected the returns that the G77 got in terms of its negotiations with the industrialized countries. But yet, even today, this grouping still remains the major grouping on negotiations within the United Nations on economic issues. It has learned the lessons which Ambassador Razali has pointed out. It has tried to now make its own demands into fit into the reality of the situation.
Clovis Maksoud is my other guest today, a former ambassador for the League of Arab States. Dr. Maksoud now directs the Center for the Study of the Global South at the American University in Washington, D.C.
Well, you must remember that the G77, which also used to be called the Non-Aligned Group of Nations, has always sought to consolidate its technical and legal independence with the independence of judgment. And on core issues, it has sought to maintain during the 50s and 60s and 70s what is called the non-aligned policy, which was to distance themselves from the two formulas of capitalism and communism and try to develop their own sense of direction. There was a dynamics for change, but they wanted to be a change according to their own priorities and agendas, and therefore they did not want to be co-opted into one system. At this moment, after the end of the Cold War and the sort of attempt at regrouping the North, it becomes more and more imperative that the South-South relations, what we have at this moment is this level of disarray whereby many South nations, South countries have developed a vertical relationships with the parts of the North instead of enhancing their horizontal relations amongst themselves. I think the challenge before the Group of 77 is not only to confine their operations, diplomatic operations within the context of the United Nations, but to translate it into a far more productive relationship among the countries of the South, not in confrontation with the North, but in order to enhance their negotiating or bargaining position, in bringing transfer of technology, in rendering the global economy more conducive to respond to their social and economic requirements. And in terms of definition of terms, the term human rights, for example, means for the global South much more than the political rights which are needed. It means also the satisfaction of basic needs.
Ambassador Razali, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I want to add. If you don't accept the premise that the human person is the center of development, and development is about maximizing the full potential of each human person everywhere, including vulnerable groups, women, minorities and all that, then you have to look at the theater of the South, where these things are most really badly attended to all these years. And if you want to join efforts, both North and South, to do things like prevent global degeneration of the environment, for example, you have to look at the problems, the root causes of these things in the South. I'm not saying the North are not responsible for environmental degradation, but there are serious problems of poverty, for example, in the South, which contributes very strongly to global desecration. Now, if you want to attend to all those problems, you have to begin to address those issues that have been neglected for all these years. At last, now, there are common issues between the North and South, jointly recognized at important meetings of the UN and elsewhere, that will give us a common program to try to do something about it. The problem is the North now are facing serious domestic pressures and are quite forgetting the humanitarian principles that they themselves have espoused much earlier. We're getting a situation where there is identification of the problem, but there seems to be no means of implementing those problems, solutions to those problems.
My guests on this edition of Common Ground are Razali Ismail, Malaysia's ambassador to the United Nations, Clovis Maksud, director of the Center for the Study of the Global South at the American University, and Prakash Shah, the ambassador of India to the UN. Printed transcripts and audio cassettes of this program are available from Journal Graphics. Please listen at the end of this broadcast for details on how to order. Common Ground is a service of the Stanley Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts a wide range of programs meant to provoke thought and encourage dialogue on world affairs. Ambassador Shah from India would agree that the developing countries, or nations of the South, have a lot of internal problems. Government corruption plagues many reform efforts. Still, he finds that the richer countries of the North have an obligation toward his country and other poorer nations.
A large number of G77 countries have come to believe and have therefore sought to implement market-oriented reform policies. Because one of the grievances was that you are asking for aid, you are asking for access, you are asking, but your own domestic economic policies need to be seen, as he mentioned. The South must also look at its own problems with a view to reviewing them. And yet the problem continues to arise because at considerable risk of political and economic discontent in their countries, a number of developing countries have adopted market-oriented economic policies. And for a long time, for a number of years, the North was saying, you adopt these policies and things would improve, we will come to your help, etc., etc. And now you find that a number of countries have, as I said, at considerable risk domestically, adopted these policies, and yet the external economic environment, which is created by the developed countries, have not only not improved, but it has deteriorated. And as we have been discussing, in fact, the policies adopted domestically by a number of developed countries actually has deteriorated the external economic environment. So the point I'm trying to make is that while there has been progress in terms of understanding each other's point of view, progress in terms of adopting what may be good or what may considered to be good by many countries, the commitments, the promises that were given by the North in this regard have not only not been implemented, but in effect their domestic policies have deteriorated these conditions to a level where many of these developing countries are finding difficult to sustain their own economic reforms which they have instituted.
Ambassador Shah, India was a leader in the non-aligned movement, which I always sort of associated with the Cold War more than today. I have two questions. Would you say there's still a non-aligned movement, and the countries that participated in that, do you think they fared better during the Cold War as far as getting some response from the North? Because you're saying the North is not responding now, they're turning inward domestically.
The non-aligned policies were started with a view to say that as far as we are concerned, we will make our own decisions on any major issue, that we are not going to be bound by decisions taken by one group of countries or another group of countries, and that in the process, we will also throw up the issues that are of importance to us. And therefore, in the earlier years, when the Cold War was going on, there were the issues of decolonization, there were the issues of development, there were the issues of disarmament, particularly nuclear disarmament. These were the issues that were thrown up by the non-aligned countries. But the public image in the West felt that all that the non-aligned countries are doing is to remain equidistant from the two blocs. And now that those blocs have disappeared, what is the validity of the non-aligned movement? The real fact of the matter is that, number one, alliances have not disappeared. In fact, NATO alliance has not only not disappeared, but it's becoming stronger and perhaps deeper. And what we are saying still is that whatever a particular alliance decides in its own interest does not necessarily have to be agreed to by us, because as far as we are concerned, we are going to speak in terms of what is in our interest, and we are going to speak in terms of seeing whether those group of countries which still want to maintain independent decision-making could get together on major issues. Unfortunately, particularly on political disarmament issues, this kind of non-aligned unity seems to be not in the same genre, same unity as before, because of the breakdown of the, because of the end of the Cold War. But I would say that still on such issues as economic issues, which is where the G77 is the kind of, G77 deals with the economic issues of the non-aligned in terms of negotiations, etc., still remains very relevant and continues to have a role to play in terms of promoting the interests of the non-aligned countries.
Dr. Muxi, do you see an overall negative or positive effect of the end of the Cold War on the non-aligned movement?
Well, I think this is now a challenge after they have secured that legal independence, and they have to secure, to a very large extent, their ability to inject their own agenda of priorities into the global economy. And as Ambassador Shah has said, is the focus on development has been successful in terms of mobilization of the global community, as we have seen in Rio during the environment. Every single international conference on environment, on population, and social issues, and human rights has always been linked as a result of the pressure exercised by the South and by the Group of 77, that the question of development is integrated into all these primary issues. And then you find now in Beijing the women and development. And therefore, what the issue of focusing on development means that you're tapping a great deal of resources on the global level, or at least you're uncovering them to make them transparent so that they can be harnessed in order to expedite the process of development in the global South countries. And so, in a way, I feel that there are, of course, lots of challenges, and there's need for more, as I said, more horizontal relations amongst them, and that the strength of the Group of 77 as well to be translated from economics also to political decision making, in order that they can benefit and make it costly for the North not to respond to the legitimate priorities of the developing countries.
Ambassador Razali, Malaysia is becoming one of the Asian tiger economies. Does that affect these horizontal relationships that Dr. Maksud was referring to between the countries of the South? As he referred to, these horizontal relationships needing to be strengthened and not just focusing on a vertical north-south relationship. And I'm wondering...
We believe very strongly, as an article of faith, that we should develop South-South cooperation on the kind of horizontal metrics that Dr. Maksud was talking about. And this certainly has to be done, and this should be done within the context of G77, within the context of non-aligned movement. It is possible now to do things within the South that is even more efficient than doing things between the North and the South. I mean, the fact that why we are recognized as having advanced is because we are been able to compete with the North. I mean, so it is possible to find countries that can do among themselves in the South that could be a salutary example to other countries of the South. I mean, this makes the point that with proper development and good government, every country has a chance to improve. And therefore, if there is a question of international help, all countries can improve. There is no question of a depressed area, of a bottomless pit for the South. We completely disabuse, we should abuse ourselves this kind of notion. But for us, there are two aspects that we want to emphasize. There is no more excuse for bad government, even in the most hostile of external environments. Countries must be seen to succeed because people have waited long enough for all these years. And if there is bad leadership of a sustained nature, they should be thrown out. Simple as that. And at the same time, we need international help, international cooperation to do the things in order for us to make up for all the time we have lost and all the exploitation that has befallen on the countries of the South. These are the two aspects we have to do.
I think the specific question that you mentioned does not in any way reduce what he calls the horizontal cooperation. In fact, the successes of countries like Malaysia are lessons to the other countries in the South. And we have seen forums such as the G15, etc., where countries like Malaysia, which have been successful, are prepared to share their experiences and prepared to give their assistance.
The G15 being the more economically successful members of the G77? Am I describing that correctly?
The G15 is a group of countries which are, let us say, the more prominent or the bigger countries of the Asia, Africa, and the Latin American region. And this is a kind of program developed by the G15, but it's available to the entire G77. So I don't think I'm wrong in saying that they are achieving the status of Asian tiger has in any way reduced their interest in South-South cooperation. If anything, it has increased. If anything, it is something that they provide which others can learn from and get together and promote this horizontal cooperation.
Now, what I've been hearing mostly is, it seems right now in our conversation, we're talking more about economic development. I'm wondering where human rights fits in, how it's being integrated into development as well. Dr. Maksud.
Human rights is an objective which every society wants to have. You must realize that during the anti-colonial national liberation movements, there was a solidarity which in certain instances in the aftermath of independence, it was translated into some sort of totalitarian experience. And that was one of the most unfortunate aspects where in the name of liberation, liberty of individuals was suspended. This has not been characteristic of all the global South, but it has been characteristic of many parts of it. I think there is a realization, however, that human rights, as I mentioned earlier, is also the rights of survival, the rights of elementary rights, which
basic necessities being
which the North assumes as axiomatic and doesn't have to seek them, only to improve these needs. In our case, in the case of the Global South, these are basic human rights. They are, in a way, humane rights, which have to be the base to anchor the capacity to bring about democratization and human rights respect. And I think that needs a great deal of sensitivity on the part of the North to understand the quest for humane rights as well as human rights in the Global South. And I think this is where the United Nations constitutes a platform whereby a sort of cross-fertilization of ideas should be enhanced instead of what Ambassador Razali said earlier, not to have there the Western political culture dominate and determine the agenda, whether of human rights or the terms of reference of discourse. I think that in this respect, the United Nations must regain a level of balance. First of all, between the General Assembly, which has been for the last few years marginalized, and the Security Council, which has been hyperly active in a way dominated not only by the Permanent Five, but by the Permanent One, which has been able to extract a level
United
of
States, you're referring to.
In this sense, the United States, and which has, to a very large extent, I wouldn't say marginalized, but up to a point, a little bit of paralysis for the non-aligned group in the Security Council has not been able to articulate its input or to communicate its input into the decision-making processes of the Security Council. In this respect, I feel that the Secretariat should be a cushioning instrument to restore a modicum of balance between the power of the superpowers in the Security Council and the frustrated influence of the G77 in the General Assembly.
Yes, Dr. Maksud, you anticipated my final question, and that was how important the United Nations is to the G77 and the countries of the South in meeting their aspirations today. Is it as important as it once was? Is it more important today? Ambassador Razali?
For us, as I said somewhere else, the United Nations is perhaps the last place of refuge for the countries of the South. I think this is a very important point for us. It means that we have no other place where our problems are put on the table. We don't have a G7 and all that. So there, with the help of numbers and taking into account that we belong to the huge majority of humanity with a whole multiplicity of problems and population, we have a right to be heard. And this is why the UN is very, very important. Any attempts at trying to marginalize the role of the UN in terms of doing it somewhere else, whether it's Bretton Woods or G7, would affect the lot of the developing countries, and this is extremely important for us. We know that the UN has limitations; is not doing as good as best as it should. There are problems within the leadership of the United Nations itself. Those things have to be corrected. But that this is not an excuse for the North to backpedal or to fudge over commitments that they had made with the international community. I mean, this is the point that's very important. They cannot get out of those commitments because they say the UN is not efficient enough to handle all these things. Therefore, let's go back to the Bretton Woods, where the donor calls the tune. This we don't accept.
That was Razali Ismail, Malaysia's ambassador to the United Nations. We also heard on this edition of Common Ground from Clovis Maksud, director of the Center for the Study of the Global South at the American University, and the ambassador from India to the United Nations, Prakash Shaw. For Common Ground, I'm Mary Gray Davidson. If you'd like to order a printed transcript or an audio cassette of this program, you can send $5 per transcript or $11.70 per cassette to Common Ground, show number 9537, Journal Graphics, 1535 Grant Street, Denver, Colorado, 80203. Again, ask for program number 9537. To order by credit card, call toll-free at 1-800-825-5746. If you'd like more information about the Stanley Foundation or you have some comments about the program, you can write to us at 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa, 52761. Again, the toll-free number to order cassettes or transcripts is 1-800-825-5746. Our theme music was created by B.J. Lederman. Common Ground was produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.